Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, as I usually do every second Saturday of the month at 2 p.m. Central Time. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself. I've had 10 careers. My first career after arriving in the United States from Jamaica was as a fashion model. Then I was a singer on the MCA label, a corporate consultant for Accenture. And today I'm a professional speaker and trainer and author and blogger and certified professional coach, leadership and confidence coach for Forbes Coaches Council, certified John Maxwell coach and radio show host. So let's set the tone for today's show. Leo F. Buscaglia said, "A loving relationship is one in which the loved one is free to be himself, to laugh with me but never at me, to cry with me but never because of me, to love life, to love himself, to love being loved. Such a relationship is based upon freedom and can never grow in a jealous heart." And I say, a loving relationship is one where I can truly be the real me and know that I'm accepted as I am. That's what I say. We have a fantastic show for you today. Joining us later will be Greg Kuhn, who will be taking your calls and questions. So be sure to call us at, got this number, Greg, 646-381-4198. And by the way, if you're listening online, please mute your computer first. So today's show is titled Manifest a Better Relationship Through Quantum Physics. Quantum physics has a lot to say about relationships, even the human variety. As we uncover more accurate information about how our universe really works, we can use that information to model how we make a relationship work. It turns out that the principles which govern the behavior of energy in our universe also work extremely well as a guide to our behavior in relationships. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. Greg Kuhn is a professional educator. He's a writer. He's a speaker. And for the last 17 years, he's written about optimizing the human experience with his father, Dr. Clifford Kuhn, and in his best-selling Why Quantum Physicist book series. In his latest book, The 30-Minute Soulmate, Greg explains how you can empower yourself and experience more of what you want. The 30-Minute Soulmate and all of Greg's books are available on Amazon. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hi. Hey, Yvonne. Great to be here.
My first question is, what does quantum physics say about relationships?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, I'll go back to this. Quantum physics has a lot of really interesting, well, more than interesting, confusing, bewildering, perplexing, astounding science that we can delve into. What interests me even more than the specific science and the experiments are the paradigms that we can glean from it. And I want to explain that really quickly and simply. A paradigm is just a fancy word for the reason we do things the way we do them. And, you know, so all of us operate with paradigms. And what quantum physics does is it throws us some pretty major curveballs. And when it comes to relationships, whether that's of the romantic variety or the professional variety or what have you, I go back to one of the paradigms that quantum physics shifts for us, okay? And that is this. Quantum physics, quantum theory, is really clear about something that is an awfully strange concept, and that is the observer and the observer observed are simply two different perspectives of the same thing. That's quite a heady concept to wrap our heads around. The observer and the observed are merely two different perspectives of the same thing. Now, there's a lot of places we could take that. But what I will say is this, where I have mined it for relationship gold in a wide array of relationship goals is that really where we are all observing ourselves in everything around us. I am observing myself in every single aspect of the universe that I experience. That's a pretty wild concept, isn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to wrap your head around it. How can you be the observer and another aspect of the observed simultaneously?
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. And you know what? For people unfamiliar with quantum theory, it's not insulting at all to call it bizarre. In fact, Richard Feynman, one of the most famous modern physicists, said that I'm paraphrasing here, that if you think you understand quantum mechanics, you don't really understand it. It definitely is a science that seems to run counter sometimes to our, everyday life experiences. You know, how could we possibly, Yvonne, if you look around at your surroundings right now, wherever you are, in your home, in your office, the people around you, the things around you, these are all separate entities. They're not us, but yet we're observing ourselves when we observe them. How can that be possible? Well, it is possible. It's possible because we exist in our own individual universes. Yvonne's universe is Yvonne's alone. I'm a part of it right now, yet I have my own individual universe. My universe is mine alone, and you are a part of it right now. What is happening is that through our observations of each other, we create a version. I create a version of Yvonne that exists in my universe. And although Yvonne has a great deal of influence that she can exert upon the version that I create, the version I create is mine. Those decisions are mine and mine alone. And yes, absolutely. Can you influence those decisions? You bet. If you compliment me, if you praise me, if you reward me, if you entice me, if you remind me, if you on and on and on and on, you can absolutely influence a more positive version of Yvonne for me to create. Yet, let's say that I didn't like women who wore red lipstick, and you happen to wear red lipstick. And I know that might be kind of a silly example, perhaps.
It's highly relatable.
But, the bottom line is this. Ultimately, no one has as much power over the version of Yvonne that I create as me. You could be the nicest person that you're capable of being, and I might still create a less than stellar version of Yvonne. Now, I do want to say that there are times where I create a less than stellar version of people, places, and things in my universe that seem quite appropriate, right? I don't know that for me the goal of pursuing quantum paradigms, of employing a quantum paradigm such as this in my relationships, the goal isn't necessarily to turn jerks into princes. However, what I will say is this. My goal is to find the greatest quotient of prince or princess that is possible in Yvonne, in my wife, in my children, in my business associates, in my neighbors. I do not want to live a life where the inner prince and princess that exists within other people, places, and things is limited by my own observations. And fortunately for us, that quantum paradigm of being, you know, two different perspectives of the same thing points me back to the solution. It's me. The solution is me. And you know what? I'd like to demonstrate that with you if you don't mind.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. All right. Let's try an experiment. I want you and everyone who's listening right now can do this experiment with us right here in real time. It's real simple. It's real brief. All right. Yvonne, I want you to think and do this privately. I want you to hold somebody in your mind who makes you feel good. And I want you to feel good while you think of that person. I'll give you 5 seconds to do that, okay? Okay. By the way, I didn't think about this ahead of time. Sorry for the dead air there.
Okay.
I understand for a live radio show, that's not exactly the optimal. So thanks for bearing with me.
Okay.
All right, now you had thoughts, you had feelings, you had ideas, you had things that ran through your head and coursed through your body as you held that person in your mind. And now I want you to do something else. I want you to take that very same person, and I want you to think about them, hold them in your mind. Only this time, I want you to fulfill your absolute full potential to feel absolutely over the top about this person. And if you'll indulge me with one more 5 seconds of dead air, I'd really love for you, I'm talking max out your full potential for celebration as you hold this person in your mind. Okay, good. Now, Yvonne, I want to ask you, kind of taking a chance here, because I don't know how you're going to answer this question, but was there at least a slight difference between the first time and the second time?
Well, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, here's what I want to propose to you. Here's why this is a quantum experiment, right? That difference between the first time and the second time, I mean, it was the same person both times, right?
Yes.
And your feelings were authentic both times, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. The difference between the first and the second time was done for you. It wasn't done for that person. It was done for Yvonne. Now, we can step back and say, well, okay, Greg, but let me say, you told me to do it. You know, first of all, Greg, you told me to pick out someone I felt good about. Secondly, you instructed me to go over the top. And I'd say, absolutely, you're right, I did, Yvonne. That's how life works, right?
Yeah.
We often get reminded that there's more. But even with that reminder, even with me setting the stage like that, you found that extra energy, that extra beauty, that extra excitement for you. That you did for you. Yes, you did it to fulfill my experiment. Yes, you did it because I asked you to, but you still did it for you so that you could fulfill the experiment. And here's where this, it's a quantum experiment, because you had two different experiences of the same person. You generated both those experiences completely within. That person didn't suddenly become a better, more pleasing, more exciting person during the 10 seconds between the two experiences, that second experience was inherent within you all along. I'm not saying that you should have gone to that second experience right away. There was not necessarily any reason to go there the first time. But you were experiencing yourself both times. You were experiencing yourself reflected in that person through authentic qualities that you were recognizing and celebrating. And what I'd like to say about this experiment is this. The difference between the first and second experience, if you want to revolutionize your life anytime you want to, anytime you desire, by utilizing the paradigms of quantum theory, pay attention to the difference between the first and the second experience, and we can do a very simple task. It's a fun task. It's a rewarding task. Authentically find and authentically cultivate those things that made the difference between the first and the second experience. That is possible with anyone. Even if we started with someone that we didn't feel quite as good about as the person I asked you to think about, there's more within us, not them. There's always more within us. You see, Yvonne, what this paradigm tells us is that love is not something that we find and receive. Love is not something that we discover. It is something that we give. And ultimately, invariably, every single time, guess who it is that we're giving it to? You know the answer. It's not to him or to her. It's not to the spouse, the child, the coworker, the neighbor, the friend, the family member. That max authentic energy that we can find and cultivate, we're giving that to ourselves, for ourselves. Now that's a pretty heady promise.
Yeah.
But that is a promise. Now, quantum theory doesn't say those things. Right? I want to be clear about that. If someone's listening and they have a background in quantum theory, I am not suggesting that quantum theory tells us what I just shared with you. But quantum theory doesn't have to tell us that. I'm telling us that. And that's how we use quantum theory. That's how we change paradigms.
I just experienced it, though.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. What we just, that experience, that experiment is, it can be, it's part of a genre called noetic science. Noetic science is science that explores things that we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, yet we can't prove. And you just had those experiences, as did I. And throughout this conversation, and I've been talking 99% of the talking, and I'm sorry, if that's offensive to anyone listening, that tends to be how I'm wired, right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yeah.
I will say this. Although I've been doing 99% of the talking, I have been actively practicing what I've been preaching. I have been holding not only Yvonne, but everyone who is listening right now. I'm connecting with you right now. Do I see you sitting here in front of me? No. But I am connecting with every single individual within range of my voice because they, each and every unique consciousness who is now in range of my voice, is creating a version of me in his or her individual universes. What a blessing. What a gift to have the opportunity to be created in your universe, Yvonne, and in the thousands of other universes that are or will be listening to this. What a beautiful beautiful gift that you are giving me, and I want to do everything within my power to help you create the best version of Greg Kuhn that I can. And you know who I'm doing that for?
For yourself.
For me.
Yeah.
For me.
Okay.
You know what? Selfishness, it turns out, selfishness is one of the most important traits we can cultivate. Not self-centeredness. You know, not the I'm the most important person in the world or the world revolves around me. That's self-centeredness.
Yeah.
But selfishness says, I love for me. I give for me. I appreciate for me. And I exalt for me.
Actually, you
right?
know, what's great about that, though, is that you will then, because it feels so wonderful, like it did when I did the experiment the second time, you will then radiate that, and those in your presence will feel that.
That's right.
Because you're radiating it.
Well, because we're observing ourselves. See, I can't create a version of Yvonne in my universe that is greater than how I feel about myself.
That's
impossible. I can't
that's
do that.
Very, very true.
You know, because I'm observing, myself. And by the way, we create versions of ourselves the same way we create versions of other people. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole. But
yeah.
For right now, I just want to say, I might be shortchanging myself right now regarding the version of Yvonne that I'm creating. I'll never know. All I know is this. I want to grow. I want to continue to learn. Who? You know, who am I doing that for? I'm doing it for me.
So I guess that answers my question that I was going to ask, which is why we should care about it. Because that's a perfect example of why we should care about quantum.
Yeah, that's true. And I will say this, you know, I love science and I love learning, and I know that's not a unique, I know the love of learning is not a unique trait to me, although other people might not enjoy science as much. I love science because science has been in the modern world. Ever since the first scientific revolution, science has been the dictating energy behind our paradigms. The reasons we do things the way we do them comes from science.
Yeah.
And so my love of quantum mechanics, of quantum theory, comes from the fact that, A, quantum mechanics is even more precise. In fact, it's the most precise science that we've ever had on the planet. So it's even more precise than anything that's come before it. It also suggests to us ways to resolve some of our most perplexing problems, because really, Yvonne, at the end of the day, the things that I'm prone to feel good about, the areas of my life that I'm prone to be successful in, I don't really need help with those things, right?
Yeah.
I don't need anyone to teach me how to do the things I already know to do. I don't need anyone to show me how to have experiences I already know how to have. What I want to learn to do is have experiences that are different than the ones that are currently upsetting. I don't want to be surrounded by people who love me and feel lonely.
Oh, God,
I don't want to be surrounded by I don't want to be surrounded by the tools of success and feel worthless. I don't want to be surrounded by beautiful, empowering agents and feel that I'm unworthy. Those are the things I'm interested in exploring in my life. And if I understand that I'm seeing myself reflected in everything, that leads me to a pretty basic conclusion. And that is, when I am displeased by the reflection, the solution isn't in going and monkeying with the reflection. That's like, if I look in the mirror, let's say I want to grow a mustache, so I go to my mirror and I draw a Sharpie on my reflection.
That's funny.
Well, you know, and I will say this, Yvonne, in my experience, many, if not all, of my most unpleasant or frustrating experiences, when I learn to go within and find solutions to them, not in, you know, dictating how you should change so I will be pleased, but in going within and looking at myself, as those experiences grow and change and improve, what I realize in retrospect is that my frustrating experiences were a lot like a bird crashing into a window because it sees the reflection of the sky in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I've had that happen.
Yeah. And you know what the beautiful thing about that is?
Yeah.
It hurts to smash into a window. And then on top of the fact that it hurts, we have potentially embarrassment, humiliation, shame. You know, we might beat ourselves up. We might call ourselves a failure. So it compounds the pain. It's physical and emotional. The beautiful thing about realizing that that's what I've done is this. That sky that I saw reflected in the window, it's really there.
It's really there.
Yeah, it exists. Yeah. And when I change my own beliefs in accord with where I want to experience and how I want to experience life, it becomes an act of turning around and facing the sky instead of the reflection.
I like that. Now, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Because all of this is leading me to, like, tomorrow I'm going to be presenting a seminar to help people deal with issues and give critique and feedback to others. So, so how would I use, or a coworker use, what you've been just sharing? How can you use it to have a better relationship with your lover or partner or a coworker? How would I do that?
That's a great question. You know what? Here's my. I want to answer that question with a metaphor, if you'll indulge me.
Okay.
Because I love to run. I love to run. And when I'm running, I almost always experience anxiety and discomfort, physical and emotional, because I'm taking my body out of my comfort zone. You know, I call it having the audacity to go out into the world, into this space, and move my body vigorously instead of keeping it sedentary. That requires some audacity. Well, the minute I start doing that, I begin to experience physical and emotional anxiety for a variety of reasons. So here is what I've learned about running and the discomfort that comes with it. There are two primary ways that I can not only deal with, but resolve that anxiety. The first one is to tell myself, you know what, you can do this. This is ridiculous. Your body, you know, my body and my mind is overreacting. I can do this. So you know what, pipe down and just keep doing it, all right? Now, I call that reminding myself. And typically, early on in the run, that works pretty well because I'm right. I mean, what I've said to remind myself, it is correct. I'm not, you know, I've only run half a mile. I know that I'm capable of doing that. And that anxiety, physical and emotional, that comes up, I'm absolutely correct when I put that back in its place and remind myself that I'm okay and that I can do this.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
The second primary way, however, and this usually happens later on in the run, that is when I experience that anxiety, what I do instead of reminding myself is I say, you know what? Okay, anxiety, maybe you're correct. Maybe I should slow down. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe you're right, because I'm now past that initial comfort zone. But before I'm going to do that, I'm going to authentically examine whether there's truth to this anxiety.
Yeah.
And I do that by making sure that I am breathing to my pace instead of pacing to my breath. I make sure that all of my body's muscle systems are engaged. I make sure that my breaths are full, my exhales and my inhales. And that's my litmus test. And I know that if I can, having done that, if I truly am fully engaged to the best of my ability with all my muscle groups and my lungs, and I still find that anxiety, then yeah, you know what? Anxiety, you might have a point here. Perhaps I should slow down. Oftentimes, though, I find that that's not the case. And here's what I want to say. The reason why I use that metaphor is this. Yvonne, when you walk out in front of that group tomorrow, you will have some fear, as if you're a human being. Some level of fear, right?
Well,
but you won't have the same level of fear as a person who's never done it before, right?
No.
You've done this more than 100 times.
Thousands of times.
Hundreds of times. Yeah. You will experience that fear. You will be out of your comfort zone. You'll be in front of a group of people who will be looking at you and evaluating what you say and what you do and how you act and how you look and all those things. And you know that. There's some inherent fear. There's that anxiety that will exist. And that type of fear and anxiety will especially initially be the type that you can remind yourself that you don't have to dictate your actions. It doesn't have to dictate your actions. You don't have to modify what you're doing just because you are experiencing that fear that comes about when you have the audacity to be authentically engaged in your life and to step outside your comfort zone. So you will remind yourself, and it will work. It will be effective, right? And then there will be a point as a growth-minded person that you are, there will be a point where you go even further out of your comfort zone. And you'll also experience anxiety and fear in this still further, right, leaving of your comfort zone. And usually, if you're like me, what that means is you're being more honest. You're being more authentic. You're being more present. You're being more in the moment with those people. Well, if you're like me, here's the thing. My whole life, before I started writing and teaching, my whole life, when I went to that second, when I went outside further, when I went past my comfort zone still further, I always tried to deal with it the same way I dealt with the earlier, right?
Yeah.
I remind myself, or ultimately sometimes chastise myself, but more or less give myself positive affirmations and positive self-talk. And what I've learned, you know, using the running metaphor, there are times where I'm enough out of my comfort zone that there's nothing to be reminded of. I haven't been here before. And the anxiety is not going to be, you know, the fear is not going to be quelled by simple positive self-talk. I need to go within and really say and examine, am I breathing to my pace right now? Or am I going to pace myself to my breath? Am I really, you know, reconciled with myself? Am I fully engaged Am I authentically present in this moment with these people or with this individual person? And if the answer is yes, then I found I can proceed. But that distinction between those two different ways of dealing with it, you know, all of us, like, let's say it is my goal to become a public speaker or a workshop leader. I've done enough public speaking that there are many aspects of that that I can simply remind myself to proceed forward, and that the fear is a lie, and I know I've been there before. But it won't take me very long before I get into territory where those reminders, they won't have the same effect, because I don't have that experience. I don't have that wealth and depth and breadth of knowledge that I can call upon. Those are the times where we want to look within, because ultimately, remember, ultimately, we are generating those experiences. It is us being reflected by the crowd, or by the lover, or by the child, or by the friend, or by the new, you know, the job interview. Whatever it is us generating those reflections. And we're not doing anything wrong. When I'm out of my comfort zone, and I experience fear or sadness, those are the two predominant feelings for me, you know, that produce these, you know, unpleasant life experiences. When I'm there, I'm not doing anything wrong. We're not doing something wrong. We're not supposed to fix that by feeling something different. That doesn't work. I would bet $100 that everyone listening can verify that there are simply things in life that positive affirmations don't seem to fix.
Help.
You know?
That's true.
Well, in those instances, we're not doing anything wrong. We're not, you know, and typically our response is to bear down and do it harder, you know?
Yeah.
And redouble our efforts and dedicate ourselves. We're using a technique that's valuable and that works. There's nothing wrong with reminding ourselves with positive self-talk. That's an awesome tool. But when it doesn't work, it doesn't mean we're doing anything wrong. It just means, wait a minute, I'm not in territory where I simply need to remind myself. I'm in territory where I need to listen to myself, where I need to learn, to be fully present.
Time to learn.
Yeah, to grow. And you know what? For me, hey, if I'm living a life where I'm never in territory like that,
that's no good.
That's not a very good life.
No, that's not a good life. That's not a good life. So how let's have an example of using it to have a better relationship with a spouse, a partner.
Okay. So a better relationship with a spouse, right? Well, in my experience, when my relationship is less satisfying than what I want, you know, than what I'm really looking for, when I'm, you know, when I'm feeling unappreciated, or when I'm feeling criticized, or when I'm feeling taken for granted, or when I'm feeling marginalized or discounted, or when I'm feeling misunderstood, you know, those are pretty typical ways for me to describe less than pleasing experiences with my spouse, you know. So let's just take one of them. I'm feeling unappreciated, right? You know, I come home from work, I come home from work, and I'm greeted with a you know, a frown and a bad mood, and things aren't picked up, and by the way, I'm not suggesting that this is my spouse's job. I'm just saying, you know, to clean the house or anything. Don't get me wrong. But I'm looking for a little validation, a little comfort, a little appreciation, and instead I get complaints. And you know what? That just really irritates me, you know? And this is not a new, this isn't a new thing. I've experienced this before. And you know what? I get so tired of her, you know, just criticizing stuff and seeing the negative and stuff. You know, why do you got to go there? I don't want to hear that. I've had a tough day. I want to come home to a sanctuary. You know, I want to come home. You know, I love and appreciate you, honey. I want that in return. You know, I want that in return.
How are you going to turn it around?
Yeah. So what do I do? You know, well, here's the thing for me. And you know, choosing a spouse, by the way, is you know, that's heavy.
Yes.
because you know, typically I'm going to have been most vulnerable to my spouse, even if not intentionally. I mean, my spouse knows me better than I know myself many times, especially when I'm not reconciled with my fear and sadness. But here's what I would suggest. Anytime that someone is in that situation, now, you know, obviously the individual characteristics of the situation might vary, you know, but using my description as the example, here's what I would suggest. I look for defensiveness. Any iota of defensiveness that I have reveals unprocessed fear or sadness that I have. Now, that's not a chiding finger pointed at me like, you haven't been doing what you're supposed to. We all have fear and sadness that's unprocessed. I don't know about you, but and life invokes fear and it invokes sadness, especially when we're the more invested we are, the more we're gonna feel those feelings. I don't like those feelings. I don't court those feelings. I don't exalt those feelings, but they're there. And even the slightest bit of defensiveness indicates unprocessed fear or sadness. So in that instance, here's what I'm suggesting. Yes, of course, my natural inclination in that example that I gave is to give my wife a lecture and a lesson and correct her misbehavior. You know, I'm essentially what I want to do is write out a script for her, you know.
That's
right?
Really funny. Yeah.
and you know what? On the surface, that's perfectly logical. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but
here's my wife.
You won't like it or you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my wife's a separate entity. She's behaving in this way. If it's making me unhappy, hence, who should change? Obviously, her, right?
No,
I just walked into this. I'm just observing it. You know, she's the one that's doing it.
But
and all that is true. That's all true. It's perfectly logical.
Yourself,
there's nothing
though.
Wrong with it. In fact, I would say this. The only reason to do anything different is when all that mess isn't working. And really, how often does that work?
It never works.
How? Never.
Never.
Never. Right? So what is it that I do? You know, how do I bring these ideas into my relationship with my wife? Because on the surface, honestly, the truth is, my wife's mood, my wife's state of being, my wife's focus, all those things, they have nothing to do with how I feel about myself and my life. And well, of course, unless I empower them to.
Right, exactly.
I can. You know?
Exactly.
But when I remember, as soon as I recognize that defensiveness, as soon as I recognize that thought of, what a B-I-T-C-H, you know. I don't know if we cuss on this. Sorry, so I spelled it out. But as soon as I don't even have to say something like that. As soon as I feel that defensiveness, that urge to correct something so I can feel better.
She'll feel it too, pal.
Oh, if I say it,
you're done.
You know what happens. It's a fight.
and that's
a fight with no winner, you know?
That's right. Exactly.
That's a fight that just deepens a divide, you know? So instead, to do. You know, what I've found is that the it's best to include a physical activity while I process it. So going for just a brisk walk, walking the dog. Doing some calisthenics, hitting a punching bag, going for a jog, throwing the stick with the dog. Yeah. And here's the thing, right? I don't want to just give this platitude and say, yeah, just go process your feelings. Here's a way to do it, okay?
Okay.
It's two steps. There's two steps to it, and it's just two questions. That's all it is. But you know what? They work, all right? Here's the first question.
Okay.
I ask myself, what's making me so angry, or what's making me so frustrated, or, you know, whatever the feeling is, right? And answering that question, and I do this internally, by the way, in the best case scenario. But that really is about identifying, you know, what has made me angry, because something did make me angry. Well, you know, I walked in the house and here she is bitching at me and, you know, complaining, and I had a hard day and all I want is some appreciation and some love, and I want to feel like I'm an important person in her life, and she's not giving it to me. It makes me angry, right?
Yeah,
that's the first question.
And what's the second question?
Here's the second question. This is the one we often don't ask ourselves. What inside me, what is going on that it made me so angry? What has been poked in me? Now, I know the first inclination is going to be to keep the focus on the other person. You know, it's going to be to say, well, I'm so angry because this happens all the time. Or I'm so angry because she obviously doesn't appreciate me, but we want the answers to be about us. And then we might say, well, okay, I'll amend it. I'm so angry because I'm worried that she doesn't appreciate me. No. Go further, making it about us. I mean, what got poked? We don't, you know what, if someone comes up and touches my arm, like pokes my arm, aside from annoying me, that doesn't hurt. But if I have a raw wound there and they poke it, ow, right?
Yeah.
So I'm
exactly
looking for the, what is the wound in me that got poked?
Right.
And the answers are going to be things like, I'm not sure I'm worthy. I'm not sure I deserve it. I'm not sure I'm good enough. It's going to be about fear. It's going to be about sadness. And it's going to be about fear that we have about ourselves. It's going to be about sadness that we have about ourselves and our experiences. And it's going to be about our doubts, about our personal misgivings, about ourselves. Now, here's the thing. Process the anger, you know, that we find in the first question. You know, during the physical activity, we're asking ourselves that question. And we allow that, you know, we don't tell, oh, you shouldn't feel angry. No, feel it. And then ask the second question. And keep answering that question until your answer is really about you. Not you in context with her, but you. What in you feels inadequate, feels unworthy, feels doubtful, feels not good enough? And then process that. Process that fear. Process that sadness. And here's what will happen. You'll reconcile yourself. You'll reconcile yourself so that you'll be in a place where you can walk back into that kitchen, go back in front of your spouse, and now what you're going to see is a reflection that has much more empathy, that has much more compassion, that has much more open-mindedness. It doesn't mean that your spouse is not going to continue to be in a bad – your spouse might still be in a bad mood.
Oh, absolutely. But the empathy will help.
Right?
Yeah,
you've changed.
How you're processing the whole experience has changed. Yeah. So
yes,
your reflection will
change.
We've got about 9 minutes to go, and I want to ask a couple more questions.
Yes, ma'am.
What are the top three action steps that the listener can take from our discussion today.
All right,
Action
steps. Number one is, I would say this, look for defensiveness. Practice looking for defensiveness, right? You might find yourself 10 minutes down the defensiveness track before you realize it. That's fine. You realized it. And the more you stay open to it and look for it, the quicker you'll find it. The goal, if you want better relationships, is to recognize the defensiveness response within before it even comes out. Mm-hmm. But anything short of that doesn't mean you failed. Just as close as you can to that goal. But I'd say that's number one. Defensiveness is such a beautiful thing because you know as soon as you feel it, you've got some reconciliation to do.
You've got some work to do. What's number two?
Number two is process. Is ask those two questions and process the feelings that come out. There's nothing wrong with your feelings. There's nothing wrong with you for having them. You don't have the wrong beliefs, but sometimes you have beliefs that don't serve you as well as you'd like them to. Now, that's true. But you know what? As long as we don't process the feelings that accompany those beliefs that aren't serving us as well as we'd like, they're still going to be there. Because those kinds of feelings that are creating, those kind of beliefs that are creating those kind of reflections, and then the feelings that alert us to them, they're there. They're what we have. They're real, and they're being reflected back to us. They can be changed. We change by going toward the roar. You ever watched lions hunt on the savannah? And here's what happens. The male lions go on one side of the herd that they're hunting, and then the lionesses go on the other, and the male lions start roaring, right? The antelope gets scared and they take off running in the opposite direction right into the lionesses. Okay? So ironically, the antelope would be much safer if they ran toward the roar.
Yeah. Exactly.
We can do the same thing in our lives. When we get angry and we process it, we're running toward the roar. That's where the salvation lies. When we go further and ask ourselves the next question and process our fear and or our sadness, we're running toward the roar, and that's where the salvation lies.
So what's the third step?
So the third step is this. Know that this universe that you're experiencing right now is the universe that you're creating. Martin Rees, he's a British astrophysicist. He said, the universe is here because we are here to observe it. Without Yvonne, there would be no universe. The universe you experience, right?
Yeah.
Go of the whip. When you are displeased by your experiences, when you are being reflected back to yourself in a way that's displeasing, quit beating yourself up and realize and just remember that sometimes reminding yourself of beliefs that you don't quite have yet doesn't work. And that's okay. Yvonne, you're a very successful woman. In fact, probably more confident and accomplished than many of us that are listening to this right now. Yet, even though that's true, are you done yet? When you look at your life,
not even close.
Can't you see just so much room for growth? Absolutely. Me too.
Yeah.
In fact, the most successful, accomplished people in life will tell you, I'm nowhere near where I can be. I'm nowhere near where I want to be.
That is very true.
Absolutely. All have beliefs that we can grow. We all, no matter how successful I become, I always find that I have beliefs that don't serve me as well as I'd like them to. And when you find yourself, so the last tool, the letting down of the whip, you know, the self-beating that we administer.
Yeah.
Remember, when that's happening, when you're tempted to do that, you were just a bird that saw a reflection of a beautiful sky, and you flew toward it. And you didn't know it was a reflection, but that sky is real, and it's there. Step back. Give yourself a break. Don't expect perfection. And reconcile yourself. Go to the two questions and reconcile yourself. Run toward the roar.
I like that. So what do you have going on right now?
Well, right now I'm trying my very, very best to write my next book. And you know what? The scariest, there are times where I will tell you the scariest thing in the world is a blank page. So that's what I'm working on. I'm gonna be at a conference in January. That's the next thing that I have on my travel docket. I don't go out and really hustle and actively promote speaking engagements. That's not a part of my. I love to get up in front of people, and I'll do it every time I'm asked, unless it's impossible for me. But I'm probably about 5 years away from really going full bore into that. Right now, I'm still continuing to write and to speak and to talk with beautiful people like you. I really, really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to share with you.
It's been my pleasure. And folks, let me just say that you can learn more about Greg and his work and his book at whyquantumphysicist.com. And I can tell you that I have read every single one of his books, and you can pick any one of them up and jump right into quantum physics and have a much, much better understanding. Greg, thank you so much for being a guest on today's show. And my thanks to all of you for joining us today for the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. Join us again next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, let me leave you with these final words. Marion Keyes said, "Some think love can be measured by the amount of butterflies in their tummy. Others think love can be measured in bunches of flowers or by using the word forever. But love can only truly be measured by action. It can be a small thing, such as peeling an orange for a person you love because you know they don't like doing it."
90 seconds.
And Friedrich Nietzsche said, "We often refuse to accept an idea merely because the tone of voice in which it was expressed is unsympathetic to us." Remember to find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy. And also follow the show at blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next month. Thank you very much. And thanks a lot, Greg.
60 seconds.
My pleasure. Thank you.